any lane there is a barber showing photographs of every head he's had the pleasure to know, and all the people that come and go stop and say hello. On the corner is a banker with a motor car, the little children laughing him. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. I'll be here until 10:30 this morning. We began the show today with a conversation with Sheila Dodd. She is the executive director at Habitat for Humanity of Champaign County. And after that, an open line up until about 10:30 or so. Lots of things to talk about on the open line, the Plan Commission and the landmark status for three properties over by Champaign Central High School. And we got the judges denying the request for the delay in the Brent Christensen trial. Champaign Police Chief shuffling veterans in the department succession plan. And plenty of other things. So you can call talk to Sheila Dodd if you'd like about the humanity. Habitat for Humanity, and they got some special things coming up. They got stuff going all the time. And we'll talk to her about her background a little bit. So you can call 356-9397. Or the Castle Heating and the Cooling text line is 351-5357. Sheila Dodd, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. Thank you for having us.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. We had a little mix-up the last time. Poor Sheila came and sat out in the lobby there thinking she was on, and I thought somebody else was on, and we just got it all kind of mixed up.
Well, it all worked out well. Thank you.
First time when it happened in the history of radio. You've been in this business quite a long time. You've been at Habitat for, what, 7 years now?
Yep.
And before that, with the city.
Yeah, I worked for the city of Champaign and the city of Urbana. So lots of experience in community development.
What kind of, you were doing community development at both those other places?
Yes, I was.
Is that a tough job?
It is tough. It's tough to get the neighborhood engaged, but it's very rewarding to drive in the community and see the difference that you can make.
Let's talk about, skip over all your time you've spent with the city and then this morning and during our time, just talk about Habitat for Humanity. For a long time I thought, okay, this is an organization that they go out and they do good work, they build a house now and then, and but boy, you've got something going all the time, and this is a really a big, fast-moving, and important organization. I'd like for you to talk about it a little bit, a little bit.
Yes, it is a great organization. This is our 25th year in Champaign County, serving Champaign County, and it's been exciting. We have been recognized in March by Habitat for Humanity International as an affiliate of distinction, which means we're looked at as leaders throughout the United States and what we do. They recognized 23 of over 1,400 affiliates, so pretty nice honor. We've also been recognized by the Champaign County Chamber of Commerce as a Small Business of the Year. And we also...
Well, that was just recently, wasn't
it? Yep, that was. It was a couple weeks ago. Which, a lot of people don't think of a nonprofit as a business, but we invest over $1 million back into this community each year. And that's just in building materials, supplies for our store, that type of thing. So there's a lot going on. We are somewhat unique in that we are three separate businesses. We have a thrift store that supports our business. We're a construction company, but we also are a bank. We hold the mortgages for the people that we sell the houses to. It's at 0% interest, so it makes it affordable for many homeowners, but we do carry the mortgages.
Tell me about the store. Where is it and what is there?
The store is at 119 East University Avenue on the corner of 2nd and University. And it is going to be celebrating its 15th anniversary next year. And it just has a wide variety of things, everything from kitchen cabinets, exercise equipment in the basement, furniture, and on the first floor. And then the second floor is pictures and things you have to dust and dishes and all of those kind of things. So one of the things I really like about our organization is that it gives us an opportunity to share with other nonprofits. So when the United Way opened up their family shelter, we were able to help them with furniture and dishes and stuff for the shelter. And that partnership just makes our community stronger.
Where do you get this? Is this a stuff, if I may call it that, yes. Donated to you?
Yes, it's good stuff.
Good stuff, yeah.
Yep. It's donated through the generosity of the community. People just from all over bring stuff to us. Or if stores have an overstock or something that's slightly damaged or something that's not selling, then stores in the community donate to us as well.
Is there a lot of activity there? A lot of people?
Yep, there sure is. We are open Wednesday through Saturday from 10 to 6, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Saturdays from 10 to 4. And it's just busy all the time. Right now we're full of Christmas, so if you need a Christmas tree or ornaments or that kind of thing, start with us because you can probably find a good bargain.
Well, let's talk about the houses. That's years ago, Jimmy Carter, and I guess President Carter is still involved in it. You were telling me that he helps on houses in Europe or in across the sea once in a while or one year, and then comes back here for a year?
Yes, he does. Yeah, 90% of Habitat for Humanity's houses are built outside the United States.
Really?
Yeah,
90%. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so Jimmy Carter, once he left the presidency, got very involved with Habitat. Although he's not our founder, many people see him as the face of Habitat.
Mm-hmm.
Last year he built in Canada, and this next year he's going to be building in South Bend, Indiana. So that's really quite an honor to get him in the Midwest.
Talk a little bit about what it takes to become a person that winds up with a house, a recipient.
Right. People can apply for our program. We kind of have an open interest time. And then once we get to the point where we've got budget, we know we can build, we will accept applications from those people who've given us interest. We approve our families based on three things. They have to have need. They have to be willing to partner. So if the News Gazette wanted to sponsor a bill, they'd have to be comfortable coming and talking to employees and maybe doing your show. And then they have to have the ability to pay a mortgage. We want to make sure that once we sell the house to them, they're able to pay the mortgage and be a responsible homeowner.
They have to work on the house as well, don't they? They put in so many hours?
They do. They have to do 250 hours of sweat equity, and that includes...
Sweat equity, I like that.
Yep. That's 100 hours on their own home or others. We require them to work 80 hours in our store because the store does support our business. We do 30 hours of financial education where we teach them budgeting and credit and how to read your credit report, how to shop for insurance, all those things that you just don't know. They used to teach it in high school in a consumer economics class, but they don't anymore. And so we want our families to be successful, so we do require them to take those series of classes.
How many houses would you build in your area, Champaign County?
Last year we built 10. This next year we're looking at 6 to 8, depending upon the generosity of the community. We have a big fundraiser coming up next week, or the week after Thanksgiving, with the Channel 3 Day of Giving. And so they'll be people will be able to drive through and donate money to us, and we'll use those funds to build houses.
Well, tell us more about that. I don't mind promoting something on Channel 3 because this is for a good cause, but I know they do some good work. And they call it out in the back parking lot.
Yep.
You drive by there and easy to drop off money or whatever.
Right. On November 28th, the Day of Giving, you can drive by on And just drop off change. They're going to be honoring habitats throughout Central Illinois, but any donations made in Champaign will go to support our organization. They're going to be doing it in Danville, Decatur, Sangamon County, Coles County, as well as Champaign County.
Well, Sheila, if I made you a queen for a day and you could have anything you want, what would be in your priority list? Top two or three things. What are you looking for other than financial support?
Financial. We can always use volunteers.
Volunteers?
Yep.
Well, what do volunteers do?
We would love to have some more volunteers that come regularly to our ReStore, and they could do anything from help stock shelves, decorate those trees we're trying to sell right now. They could work in our administrative offices. You can always use help there, as well as out on the builds. People tend to think we only need volunteers out on our
build people site. With hammers and nails.
Right. And we'd love to have them there, too. You don't need to have any experience to work with us in any parts of our business.
Tell me a little more about the financing part. You said you're kind of a bank.
Yes, yep, we are. We sell the homes to families at appraised value because we don't want to devalue a neighborhood. And then people make payments back to Habitat. We put that into a separate fund called our Fund for Humanity, and then we use that to build houses in the future. So it's kind of a pay-it-forward type model.
Well, that sounds terrific. I knew about your store. I knew you build houses. I had no idea you were kind of a bank, too.
Yep. It's very interesting.
Well, I appreciate you dropping by. You didn't have very far to walk here, did you?
No, I didn't.
Where is your office?
We're located above the ReStore on the corner of 2nd and University.
Well, I appreciate you coming by. Is there any last thoughts that you might have that we might have forgotten?
No, please come and support us at the ReStore. We love seeing your faces in there.
And volunteers, what, they just call you up or come over and say, I'm willing to help? What should they do?
They can get online on our website at cuhabitat.org, or they can come into the store and talk to us, either one. We're also getting ready to have a fundraiser out at Marketplace Mall where we wrap gifts. And so you can, you know, volunteer to sign up and wrap gifts for us.
I'm going to volunteer Ed Bond. He doesn't do much during this time of year, so he's not very busy. He's shaking his head no, but we'll try to convince him. Well, Sheila, thanks for stopping by. Your organization's doing terrific work, and we wanted to kind of bring people up to date on where you are right now, and this doesn't have to be the last time. Any time that you have something that you would like for us to share with other people, please feel free to let us know.
Okay, thank you.
Sheila Dodd has been our guest. She is the executive director at Habitat for Humanity of Champaign County. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll throw the lines open for other topics on an open line up until 10:30. Then you see, Money Talk follows that. Coming back after this break. This is Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. We have an open line going now up until 10:30 or so. At that time, we'll break away and turn the program over to Busey Money Talk. The folks from Busey come by on the third Thursday of each month, and that's what this is. Now, tomorrow, we have a very important program. Listen up for this. Shanae Rice Madigan, who is with Health Alliance, is going to talk to you about insurance options and enrollments for 2018, prices, those kinds of things. That'll be at 10 o'clock. We'll have an open line at 9. Then on Monday, it'll be our normal Monday morning quarterback show with Lauren Tate. And then Tuesday, on November 21st, from 9 until 11, the three amigos will be getting together, Justice Robert Steigman, Judge Michael McCuskey, and Jim Dye will all be here in the studio, and we'll try to get some things a little contentious. No, we shouldn't call it that. These are all friends, right? But they have different ideas about different topics, and we've had them on several times. It's always a great pleasure. We certainly appreciate everyone's time, particularly that of Judge McCuskey, who doesn't live in this area anymore and drives over for the program. That's on Tuesday. As far as today is concerned, the Plan Commission opposes the landmark status of three properties that stand in the way of the planned expansion of a Champaign Central High School. See if you have any opinions about that. The proposals will then be considered by the Champaign City Council on December the 5th. Council ordinarily goes along with those proposals, so we will see if indeed that happens. And this is all part, of course, of the Keeping Central movement. It started way back prior to the winning referendum. And yesterday, the judge denied a request for a delay in the Brent Christensen trial. And the trial will begin on February 27th. The government has to decide whether to seek the death penalty by February the 1st. And the Champaign Police Chief is shuffling the veterans in the department. He has a succession plan. This is all part of that. Elsewhere, Greg Jarrett writes that Hillary Clinton must face the consequences of her actions and the scrutiny of a special counsel. Hillary calls the Uranium One story a distraction and warns of what she calls a dictatorship. And in another world far away from ours, Leonardo da Vinci's painting is sold for a record $450 million. They tell me that's a new world's record for a painting. The painting is one of fewer than 20 paintings known to exist, and the only one in private hands. It's called Salvador Mundi, which is Italian for Savior of the World. Out in California, that California shooter, Kevin Neal, had killed his wife, also bringing the death toll to 5 now. Her body was found under the floorboards in their home. And are you traveling over the Thanksgiving holidays? Well, welcome to the crowd. Predictions are that 50.9 Americans will be traveling by car, train, or plane. 50.9 million. Three UCLA basketball players suspended indefinitely from their team by Coach Steve Alford for shoplifting at three expensive stores in China while the team was there to play a game against Georgia Tech. Players were arrested in China, but were permitted. They didn't come back with the team, but they were permitted to come back later to the United States. And apparently, after some assistance from President Trump, the players thanked the president for intervening on their behalf. So those are just some of the things that we want to talk about today. Maybe you have something else on your mind. If you do, let me know. Here's the way you get on the program, 356-9397. The text line is 351-5357. So what is on your mind? Any of those stories that I just gave you, want to pick up on those as we go along and talk about them in more detail today? That's fine. If you want to bring up something entirely new, that's fine too. See, we're couple of the Big Ten teams that got beat last night. Northwestern loses a game to Creighton, and Indiana got beat by Seton Hall. And this is very interesting about what's going on with the Northwestern team and where they have to play. I read this morning in the Tribune the story that the first time they played there was practically no one there, so they've gotten some people together to try to get a crowd out there. It's the Allstate Arena, and people say it's about a 45-minute drive from Evanston out there, and That doesn't sound good for students, but we'll see. They're supposed to have a very good team in Northwestern, so maybe they'll draw a good crowd. Maybe they'll be busing people or something. I don't know exactly how they'll get it done, but they're a little better crowd for Seton Hall or for Creighton than they did in the first game that they played there. 9:27, we take a quick break. We're coming right back. Phone lines open until 10:30 this morning. This is Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. Phone lines open at 356-9397. Text me at 351-5357. I mentioned that the UCLA basketball players had thanked President Trump, and Trump tweets this morning, to the three UCLA basketball players, I say, you're welcome. Go out and give a big thank you to the president of China who made your release possible. And have a great life. Be careful. There are many pitfalls on the long and winding road of life. And he can tell you a few of those. That's for sure. Well, we've been talking about this Champaign Plan Commission giving this thumbs down to historical landmark to these three buildings. Wonder if you have any comments that you would like to make on that. We talked about it for quite some time when it looked like maybe they weren't going to get the buildings torn down after going through all this work and conversation that they had, and then PACA comes in right at the last minute and tries to save the buildings. The commission voted 8-1 on the Burnham building. Commissioner Lori Reynolds siding on that building with the preservationists, and it was 9-0 on the other two properties. These are up on West Church Street, 603 and 500 and 606 West Church. The proposals will be considered by the Champaign City Council at its December 5th meeting. It's very rare for the council to go against the recommendations of the Plan Commission, but who knows? The three properties are several that the district purchased to make way for the expansion of Central. It's part of that $183 million referendum that voters approved a year ago. Following the meeting, the school board president, Chris Kleppel, said he was pleased with the decision. He said, I'm pleased that we had the opportunity to present the culmination of our work and how we got there. I'm certainly pleased with the outcome, but also appreciative of the work of everyone involved. The Preservation and Conservation Association board member, Susan Appel, said, or Appel, I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name at the moment, who made the formal application for the Burnham and Bailey building, said all three buildings are historically significant. This is a collection of impressive buildings. We should be proud to have them in our midst rather than let them be convinced they're too little worth to survive. She stressed that the school district plans to replace the Burnham Mansion with a parking lot. We as members of this community still have time to consider whether we want to lose this gem for the sake of new parking spaces. Anyone who thinks that adding more student parking at Central is going to solve the congestion problem is like whistling in the wind. What are you going to do? What you're going to do is increase the number of student drivers to Central. And Brett Kroenke, a member of the one of the commissioners, said, what happened if that space was going to be no parking and instead be a science lab? Would you tear it down for a science lab? Proposals call for converting the other two properties into athletic fields. And Pat Fitzgerald, who is the attorney for Unit 4, made a presentation. It was about 34, 35 minutes long, and talked about the details of how this started, all the meetings that they had, And the fact that 65% of district voters approved the referendum to fund the work at Central and other school buildings, and Unit 4 has even offered PACA the ability to move any of these structures that are in discussion today. They've also offered PACA the opportunity to salvage any of the historically significant portions of the buildings. And he said to date, PACA has yet to respond to these offers. If Unit 4 were to try to upgrade the three buildings for public accommodation, he said the architect has estimated it would cost $2.8 million to upgrade Burnham, $1.6 million to acquire more parking, $8.3 million to upgrade the YMCA, and $2 million to upgrade the Bailey building. If Unit 4 is forced to use these properties for education, where does Unit 4 secure the funds? So that's one topic today on this open line. There are many others. I, for one, am, and I know, you know, all I know about Brent Christensen case is what we have reported on this radio station and what's been reported in the News Gazette and other media and so forth, and the conversations we've had with reporters who have followed it all. So that's all. I don't know any more than that, but I was happy to see that the trial is going to remain on February 27th. I just kept thinking about how long it's been already, and then now they ask for, what was it, October of 2018? And U.S. District Court Judge Colin Bruce said, nope, we're going to stick with the 27th, and the government has to decide whether to seek the death penalty by February the 1st. Bruce's decision was made on the premise that the Department of Justice isn't seeking the death penalty. If it does, Bruce said, the court would welcome a renewed motion to continue the trial from the defendant or from the government in order for appropriate dates to be established under those circumstances. Bruce said this. I thought this was very interesting, because they asked to go to October 2018, and the judge said, this is not a case involving extensive, high technical computer forensics, nor is this a fraud-related case involving thousands upon thousands of pages of documentary evidence. Here the questions are straightforward. Did the defendant commit a kidnapping of Yingying Zhang that resulted in her death, and did the defendant provide false statements during the investigation? Based upon the issues and descriptions of the evidence involved in this case, the court finds that this is not a complex case, requiring more than 5.5 months for the defendant to prepare. Despite this, Bruce did order prosecutors to provide Christensen's attorneys and forensic evidence analysis and written summaries of expert testimony by December 15th in order for the defendant to have a meaningful opportunity to understand this evidence and perhaps engage his own experts. Trial was originally scheduled to begin in September, but both Christensen's attorney and the U.S. Attorney's Office wanted a delay. When Bruce granted the delay to February, he said he would be very reluctant to grant a continuance beyond that date. It is 9:44 here at our studios in downtown Champaign in the News Gazette building. Always interesting to be here and to be able to watch people come in and out of the building. And there is a lot of activity here. See a lot of friendly faces. Maybe we should just drag a microphone out there and interview people as they come in. Do kind of a man on the street. What do you think, Ed? Because we're not having much luck this morning in our request for dialogue from those of you in the radio audience. at the 356-9397 or text us at 351-5357. If you're not on board with any of these stories, or you know all you need to know, or you don't have any comments on those, what else is going on in the community that you would like to know more about, or something you'd like to share with the audience? Let us know. We need to take a break. We're coming right back. This is Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. Phone lines open at 356-9397. And Don is next. Hi, Don.
Question for you.
Yes, sir.
Is it my imagination, or are there becoming more and more frequent commercials and disclaimers and so forth being broadcast where the person who is doing the broadcasting is speaking at a rate of 200 or 300 words a minute, and you just can't hardly discern what they're saying?
I don't know. Have you heard some like that?
Well, yeah, you'll hear it at least once or twice every day. To give you something to compare it against, you have one of the nicer, easy to listen to bell tone commercials of anything that you guys broadcast. But lately it seems to me like there's hardly an hour that goes by that there's not a broadcast. Typically it's commercial. And you have to strain to try to understand what they're saying. They're speaking so fast, and I wondered, are they just trying to sell 60 seconds of broadcast time and jam it into 50 seconds?
No, 60 seconds is 60 seconds. There are certain requirements on certain commercials that you, you have to, disclaimers, so to speak, you have to put those on. I'm not sure exactly which ones you're talking about, but I agree with you. There are some where people talk so fast that you have no idea. There's a lot of that on the television as well.
Oh, yeah, and, of course, in the print, they could, excuse me, they can take some of those fonts down to a 4, and you can hardly read it.
Yeah, and if there are certain medications out, there is a legal requirement, if it's a commercial for a medication of some sort, there are legal requirements about the things you have to say with regard to, if you take this, some of the side effects might be. And
right.
Then when they start rattling those off, there's so many side effects, it makes you say, I wouldn't take that thing for anything.
You got it. You got it. Well, anyway, I was just curious if this was something that...
Nothing new on that, Don. Everything's the same as far as I know. Appreciate the call, sir. Rick is next. Hello, Rick.
Yes, hi, Jim. I'm out for my morning walk. It's a little brisk.
Yes, it is.
But it is good to see the sunshine. Just real quickly, I am, of course, strongly pro-chief. And I agree with you and Lauren that there really is no need for a mascot at the U of I. But if the student board or the Senate or whatever it is, this group trying to find a mascot, I didn't know if they would have a student representing a World War One soldier. And it would be done in a very dignified, respectful way, like the chief only brought out at the half. I don't know what the student as a soldier would do. Maybe what they could do is to honor one name from one of the columns at each of the home games and maybe invite any living relatives from that person back. As I say, I don't know what they would do with this student dressed as a World War One soldier if it would march out of the band, when they start the 3-1 or just what. But, that just was my wild hair thought about if they just absolutely had to have a mascot of some sort. But unlike you, I hope that they don't, end up starting a new one.
Well, what they say is that they need something, a mascot that the students can rally around. Well, I can't imagine that they could rally around because what you're talking about seems to me to be something that might be very appropriate, but it would be very solemn.
Right.
Wouldn't it be very dignified? And the mascots that I know about are not very dignified. Bucky Badger and all those guys.
Yes, I understand your point, and that's a good point. My only other thought was if there would be one graduate student that would say, oh, this glorifies war, and then they would start on it like they did on the chief. But
a little political correctness would enter into that one probably. But Lorne Tate was in favor of, after he saw the powwow dancers at homecoming, of perhaps doing something like that, doing an authentic Native American dance on the sideline as part of the halftime ceremonies, and that was quickly shot down. That's too much like the chief.
Well, I think that I agree with Lauren. I think that might be a neat thought. Maybe they could give 8 or 10 Native American students U of I scholarships to, you know, do that at each home game. I don't know. But, yeah, I think that would be a very nice thought, too.
I tell you what the students will rally around is victories.
Yes.
I mean, mascot or no mascot, if you finally get a football team that wins 7 or 8 games a year, then you're going to have a 1980 on your hand again, where people will come out there by the thousands, and it will be a fun experience, and we won't have all this side talk about all these other things. We'll be talking about the football team and the victories, and wasn't that a great pass play, and those kind of things, as opposed to what we're talking about now. And I think a lot of this conversation goes on with people that don't remember any of that, and certainly students weren't even, many of them weren't, certainly weren't in college, might not have even been in school at that time. But you have to have victories, or you have to have an exciting team. You have to have competitive teams. You have to have something that will cause people to come and say, gee, we had fun at the game, as opposed to we had fun at the tailgate, which is what they say now.
Well, I
walked out there the other day at third quarter maybe, mm-hmm. of the Illinois-Indiana game, and it was a fairly close game at that point. There seemed to me there was as many people out in Grange Grove tailgating during the game than there were in the stadium watching the game.
Well, that could very well be, and that's of course kind of sad. I remember years ago, remember when the team carried Mike White off the field on their shoulders? I don't recall what victory that was or something, but remember when that was at an all-time high, you know, the team was winning and Mike White was new and exciting and
Nobody worried about a mascot then.
No.
Nobody said we need something to rally around.
Right.
Well, the people that are talking about that, many of them don't even go to the games in the first place.
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, appreciate the call. Thank you, Rick. We need to take a quick break here before the news coming up at 10 o'clock. And welcome back to Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. We have an open line going until 10:30 this morning, and then it'll be time for Busey Money Talk. Excuse me. So if you have something that you would like to talk about, 356-9397 is our phone number. The Castle Heating and the Cooling text line is 351-5357. And Sarah sends me a message that says, I had read earlier that Bruce Pearl was stonewalling Auburn, refusing to cooperate with the legal staff. They threatened to fire him. Did anything come of that? Maybe he has possession of a recorded phone call to hang over the heads of the administration, and they hushed up. Probably Sarah, that's probably what he has. He's got another one of those recorded phone calls that he had. years and years ago with We Know Who. And I don't know. I had not heard anything else about it. All I heard was the same thing that you did, that he was not cooperating. Of course, his one of his assistant coaches is one of the ones that was indeed arrested. And not much has happened on them either, at least at this point. You know, the Facer Law Office invites you to attend their free seminar. It's the 7 secrets you need to know to protect your home, your assets, and your family from the costs of long-term care. Learn about the law that completely changes the rules and much more. It's today, 1:30 at the I Hotel. You can still go, but you need to call the Facer Law Office at 337-1111 to reserve your spot. 337-1111. Ask about the new book, co-authored by elder law attorney Thorpe Facer, Protect Your Family, Don't Write a Blank Check to the Nursing Home. Very interesting, a letter from Janet Leroy in today's News Gazette, having to do with an experience at Memorial Stadium. Saturdays at Memorial Stadium provide a day of enjoyment and entertainment. Tailgating, marching Illini, the dance team, the cheerleaders, the block eye, and football. There are hundreds of students who have put in many, many hours to give us a day to enjoy. On November 11th, the big screen showed a photo of a marching Illini alum who had recently died. While the entire stadium fell silent, giving this young man a moment to be remembered, a grown man sitting in the student section yelled out, "Get the game going, move on." I was sitting with the students, as were other parents, for Dad's Day, and most of the students and parents turned in disbelief. What a shameful example of lack of respect. The head of the block I went over to talk with him, and after some back and forth, the man left the section to pitch the beer that he had sneaked in, but returned to his seat. This wasn't the only inappropriate behavior by non-students in the student section. I was impressed by the blockheads who monitor behavior in the section, keeping things safe and fun for everyone. I appreciate the hundreds of students who make my game day experience fun and memorable despite the final score. Please consider attending the last game the Saturday after Thanksgiving. All the seniors will be honored, and those students who have marched, cheered, danced, and played deserve one last appreciative audience. Indeed, very well put. Thank you, Janet, for that. And Todd Neely from Green Oaks says, watching the Indiana versus Illinois game, I was surprised not to hear the war chant. I applaud the University of Illinois administration and trustees for their decisive action in banning the mantra. With all the problems the university has, failing college rankings, lack of state funds, poor professor retention, 5% of women sexually assaulted every year, binge drinking, the administration and trustees should be congratulated for seeing past these arduous issues and focusing on what really matters, appeasing a few vocal malcontents. My fellow alumni, take heart and remember in the past when we attended the school, Illinois was a great university, or at least a very good one, which regrettably resulted in many students being unfairly left out. But now, with courage and foresight, the administration is quickly leading the university downward into mediocrity. Very soon, everyone and anyone, especially the vocal complainer, will be able to easily attain a University of Illinois degree. It's from Todd Neely in Glen Oaks. So if you have anything on your mind this morning, let me know. We're at 356-9397. Text us at 5357. Well, let's go to some national things. I've been concentrating on what's happening here locally. Greg Jarrett, writing for Fox News, has this to say. No person in this country is so high that he or she is above the law. This includes Hillary Clinton. There is no station in life or standing in government or political aspiration that absolves someone from criminal conduct. In this way, we are all creatures of the law and are bound to obey it. An orderly society cannot function if it permits individuals to disregard the law with impunity. The fundamental principle enunciated by the U.S. Supreme Court more than a century ago is what gives sustenance to our democracy. Without it, lawlessness, chaos, and tyranny at the hands of a few would inexorably ensue. It follows, then, that Clinton is no higher or lower than any American. She must abide by the rule of law regardless of her condition or circumstance. Running for high office, including the presidency, does not somehow establish an entitlement to legal absolution. Representative John Conyers of Michigan, the ranking Democrat, asked the following question. In a functioning democracy, is it common for the leader of the country to order the criminal justice system to retain his political opponents? Session responded that the Department of Justice can never be used to retaliate politically against opponents, and that would be wrong. Conyers, a notorious partisan, appeared to have deliberately misstated both the law and the facts. The Justice Department is duty-bound to investigate acts that appear to have violated criminal statutes. If there is sufficient evidence to support an indictment or charges, our system of justice demands that they be brought. This is not retaliation, as Conyers would have people believe, but the enforcement of laws unimpeded by political motivations. Clinton is not exempt merely because she ran for the presidency and lost. If that were the case, anyone could rob a bank and be excused from punishment by becoming a candidate for office. I will tell you what Hillary has to say about this when we come back after this quick break. Well, I just told you what the columnist had to say about Hillary Clinton. Hillary said yesterday, she described as the politicalization of the Justice Department after reports that the Trump administration was considering a special counsel to probe the Uranium One deal and alleged conflicts with the Clinton Foundation. President Donald Trump has criticized the uranium deal, suggested that Clinton, who served as U.S. Secretary of State in the Obama administration, may be implicated in wrongdoing. But in an interview with Mother Jones, Clinton claimed that the Uranium One story has been debunked a number of times and that the Trump administration was merely using the story as a distraction. And if they send a signal that we're going to be like some dictatorship, some authoritarian regimen where political opponents are going to be unfairly, fraudulently investigated, that rips at the fabric of the contract that we have that we can trust our justice system. Trump and his supporters have accused Clinton of overseeing the sale of 20% of America's uranium supply to Russia. They see her alleged role as a scandal, particularly amid charges that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia in the 2016 presidential election. Allegations have also been made that the approval of the state of Uranium One benefited major donors to the Clinton Foundation. raising conflict of interest questions. Fox News reported Tuesday that Attorney General Jeff Sessions directed senior federal prosecutors to evaluate certain issues requested by congressional Republicans. The alleged relationship between the approval of the sale and the Clinton Foundation was first raised in 2015 by conservative author Peter Schweitzer. He and others have pointed to some of the investors in the deal and their ties to former President Bill Clinton and his foundation. And this story goes on and on, some other things that the Clintons have to say, and a clip from the New York Times. That was in April of 2015. The New York Times published an article echoing much of the Schweitzer book, including one sensational contention that not long after the Russians said they wanted to acquire a majority stake in Uranium One, Bill Clinton received $500,000 for a speech in Moscow. The speech was paid for by a Russian investment bank with links to the Kremlin as it promoted Uranium One stock. Let's go to Eric. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, Jim. Regarding the recent massacre in Texas, one report stated that there were 450 shots fired at the church. The president then came on TV and he stated, "Our hearts are broken." That is a lie. If he was really sincere, he would push for the increased governmental requirements regarding increased lethality of the semiotic weapon. But he didn't say that. He has been saying, "Oh, it's too soon to talk about this," and he's just in the pocket of the NRA. He's going to continue down that line, and more people and more children are going to be murdered. Just in the last few days, this guy who shot up four people, he tried to get in a school, and fortunately somebody heard gunshots and ordered a lockdown, or there would have been just another bloodbath there. So it's just real discouraging. But I'm surprised the president, he seems pretty smart at times, and then to just put on such a transparent lie that he is so broken up about it, because you know he's not going to do a thing about it.
Well, we've had these mass shootings for several years now, not just during the Trump administration, and very little has been done about it by anybody.
Well, we didn't have them until in this multiple shootings, until this damned assault rifle was re-legalized. We didn't have anything like that with Clinton, but now we've got, you know, hell, 400, almost 500 people injured in Las Vegas and 50 people killed.
How about Obama?
Obama did not legalize that. He kept it illegal, and then when George Bush got in there before Obama, so he legalized the assault rifles.
Now, this guy in California, by the way, killed his wife, too. Did I don't know if you saw that or not.
Yes, I did. Uh-huh.
And they found her under the floorboard of their home.
Right.
So that's a mean guy. I appreciate your call, sir. I agree with you that something needs to be done. It doesn't look like anything ever is. The NRA is a tough organization to deal with if you're a congressman.
And we had a recent legislative proposal before the Illinois legislature, but you know how that went. It didn't go anyplace, even in the buck stops or bump stocks, whatever it's called. That is still legal.
Yep.
Which is crazy.
Yes, they are. Thank you. Appreciate the call. And a news story says that a TV host has accused Al Franken of kissing and groping her without consent in 2006. That's all I know about that story. We don't have any details yet, but Al Franken, of course, is in the Congress now and is very visible because he seems to be on every panel that that is on television accusing one person of one thing or another, particularly those in the Trump administration. Yes, police in Northern California said yesterday that Kevin Neal, he's the one that went on that shooting rampage a day earlier, had also killed his wife, whose body was found under the floorboards in their home, bringing the death toll to 5 people. And it is time for us to take our final break here and invite you to stay tuned for the folks from Busey. They'll be coming up here in just a bit. We'll take this break. I'll talk to you tomorrow morning.